After Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, a king of Canaan, who reigned in... Sorry, I'm beginning to understand why Sam asked me to read this. Thank you. Sorry. King of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth, because he had 900 iron chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years. They cried to the Lord for help. Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at that time. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the Israelites came to her to have their disputes decided. She sent for Barak, son of Abinoam, from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun, and lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lure Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and troops, to the Kishon River and give him into your hands." Barak said to her, "If you go with me, I will go, but if you don't go with me, I won't go." "Very well," Deborah said, "I will go with you, but because of the way you are going about this, the honor will not be yours, for the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman." So Deborah went with Barak to Kadesh, where he summoned Zebulun and Naphtali. 10,000 men followed him, and Deborah also went with him. Now Heber the Kenite, had left the other Kenites, the descendants of Hobab, Moses' brother-in-law, and pitched his tent by the great tree near Kadesh. When they told Sisera that Barak, son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor, Sisera gathered together his 900 iron chariots and all the men with him from Harosheth to the Kishon River. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Go, this is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone ahead of you?" So Barak went down Mount Tabor, followed by 10,000 men. At Barak's advance, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and army by the sword. And Sisera abandoned his chariot and fled on foot. But Barak pursued the chariots and the army as far as Harosheth. All the troops of Sisera fell by the sword. Not a man was left. Sisera, however, fled on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, because there were friendly relations between Jabin, king of Hazor, and the clan of Heber the Kenite. Jael went out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Come, my lord, come right in, don't be afraid." So he entered her tent, and she put a covering over him. "I'm thirsty," he said, "please give me some water." She opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him up. "Stand in the doorway of the tent," he told her. "If someone comes by and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' say no." But Jael, Heber's wife, picked up a tent peg and a hammer and went quietly to him while he lay fast asleep, exhausted. She drove the tent peg through his temple into the ground, and he died. Barak came by in pursuit of Sisera, and Jael went out to meet him. "Come," she said, "I will show you the man you're looking for." So he went in with her, and there lay Sisera with a tent peg through his temple, dead. On that day, God subdued Jabin, the Canaanite king, before the Israelites, and the hand of the Israelites grew stronger and stronger against Jabin, the Canaanite king, until they destroyed him. Sam's going to come up and preach now. Just down there.
Good. Even louder than usual, how blessed you are. So, yeah, all credit to Claire there for... I looked at some of those things in reading it to prepare and thought, oh, my word, how on earth do you pronounce some of these things? So I was very glad when Claire said to me, yes, I will read it. But anyway, we're not going to have a bit of a lesson on pronunciation. What I want us to think about this evening is we'll all know the church vision for this year, and we're looking at a period of adventure. And I think that when we think about adventure, we think of adventure as something we undertake in terms of risk or a thrill. But there's the other flip side of adventure in terms of thinking of it in terms of how we can help others to unlock their potential. And we don't necessarily recognise our responsibility in that. So the tagline for South Parade, as we'll all know, we've got it kind of engraved in our heads, it's risky, not reckless. But sometimes people may need first encouragement to try new things. And I think this story of Deborah reminds us kind of how helpful we can be to others of giving them a push in the right direction. So I've just got a clip that I'd like us to watch, if Tim's on the ball. Hopefully your eyesight's okay, but it's a clip of Bear Grylls and his greatest adventure.
What does it take to live a life of adventure? The truth is, the first step is always the hardest. That's the one that takes the most courage. But I've learned not to run from that fear and just do it. My Christian faith can be a little up and down, like any relationship. It has struggles and it has doubts. But it's so often brought light to a dark path. Warmth to a cold mountain, and strength to a failing body. I remember crawling onto the summit of Everest and clearing the snow from my mask to see the curvature of the earth at the edges. But finding a simple faith that empowers my life, to me, that's been my greatest adventure. Questions about life? Try Alpha.
Thank you. Now, that wasn't a plug for Alpha per se, even though you may be aware that Craig and Lister are doing a joint venture of doing Alpha for our second kind of year at Costa. But what I really like about that is that for the Alpha team, actually Jackie Pullinger's also been used, who you might be familiar with her name, but Bear Grylls is known as the face of adventure. There's not many people that wouldn't know who he is, and Alpha have really capitalised on that. And he's been, because of his status, he's been asked to tons and tons of interviews. And one of the things that he said on that video, which you may or may not have picked on, is what does it take to live a life of adventure? And the first step is always the hardest. Now, I know some people would debate that the first step is the easiest and it's maintaining it, but either way, that first step is important. And in one interview that Bear gave, he talks of the personal invitation to Alpha as being really, really key, but not just that, the willingness to accompany on the journey in helping unlock people get on the road to the greatest adventure. And I think that's really key. It's really key in this willingness to accompany on the journey. So the passage that Claire read, Deborah was the fourth of the judges who ruled over the Jewish people after the death of Joshua. And before I went, some more mispronunciations, Othniel, Ehud and Shamgar, the latter a minor judge only for a short time. And after Ehud's death, the Jews forsook, if that's the word, the ways of God and adopted many of the idols of the people about them. And as a consequence, God delivered them into the hands of the king of Canaan, Jabin, whose royal residence was the city of Hazor. I'm going with that as well. And his general, Sisera, oppressed the Jews for 20 years. And it tells us that in verses 1 and 3. So Sisera possessed a well-trained army of cavalry. He had iron chariots, which I suppose were the tanks of those days. But the people suffered terribly under the cruel reign of Sisera. And in great despair, as we do when we get into times of conflict and not a lot else has worked, cried out to God in despair. And it was God that sent them Deborah the prophetess. Now, Deborah had a tremendous influence in turning the tide against the Canaanites' oppression and idolatry. She was interested in helping the people to return to God. And she sent for Barak, and I think this is what is really, really important. It was her treatment of him that really illustrates a good basis of how we can help other people unlock their potential. So Barak was supposed to attack Sisera, win the battle, secure peace for Israel for years to come. And by the end of the story, that's what's happened. And I would like to suggest that it is largely because of her treatment of him. So the biblical account of Deborah ends with a statement that after the battle there was peace in the land for 40 years. We didn't read Judges 5, but that's the Song of Deborah. And in Judges 5:31, it talks about there was peace in the land for 40 years. Now, some of you might know me well. You might even think I'm a little bit feisty, and being given a passage about a woman telling a man to do would be right up my street, and I'm going to be a bit of a feminist. I'm going to take the gender out of this, apart from to make one point. Obviously, she was a woman and he was a man. The only thing that I think is really applicable in terms of us thinking of that gender is that in that time and that culture, it was particularly unusual for a woman to strengthen a man. And I think that's really indicative, if that indicative, yeah, that strengthening others doesn't always come naturally, and it calls for effort. Gender bit over, you'll be glad to know. So I think that Deborah and Barak, in some ways, symbolise people who are called by God, who are reluctant to go and need help to do it, and people who are capable, but they're not able or supposed to do everything. Now, I don't know how much of that you've picked up, but what I'm going to do is highlight three ways in which she acted or reacted to him that I think form a really good model for how we respond to others. So the verse in verse 8 where it says, if you go with me, I will go, but if you don't go with me, I won't go. I want you to just spend a moment, just thinking about how Deborah could have responded to Barak when he said that to her. So given her position and his position, I just want you to kind of picture some of the possible responses that she might have given. I don't know about you, but my first response wouldn't be that she would do what she did. Given her authority, given his position, if you go with me, I'll go with you. I wouldn't have thought that what she did would be the natural thing that most people would do. So if you can imagine what would happen if our chief of the defence staff, I don't know who he is, I know he's incumbent, but anyway, he's the most uniformed military advisor, and he says to the PM, I ain't going unless you're coming. How would that be? It's not what we expect. We get the idea of how authority works. We know when someone's answerable to somebody, when they get an order, that they are to do it. But there was something about Barak that would not let him step out and be the man that God called him to be. Now, I don't know what you thought of when you thought about the ways that she could have responded, but when I was thinking about him, I thought, well, she could fire him for starters for being disobedient. She could have replaced him with somebody better. She could have taken over his job. She could have berated. She could have criticised him. There were all different responses which she could have taken. She didn't do any of those. And this is what the things are which I think are really helpful for us to take on board in terms of how we treat others when we see that they need to do something and they're not necessarily doing it. So instead of berating, criticising, firing, all the rest, she strengthened him. She strengthened him by coming alongside of him. And in verse 9, she says, certainly I'll go with you. Although she does warn him, he won't get the honour. And the end of verse 10 says, Deborah also went with him. So she says she's going to go, and then it's revealed to us she does go. She didn't have to go with him. She was a leader. She could have delegated it to somebody else. But she fortified him with her presence. She came alongside him because she knew what God was calling him to do. Even though he may have responded like he did, because he was intimidated or insecure. We don't know. We're not given the reasons why. She didn't kind of take that as an issue. She came alongside him. And in that, she didn't step in front of him and do it for him. She came and gave him the inner strength that he needed to do what he was called to do in the first place. And I think it's really, really important that when we come alongside others and we support with our presence, we encourage and assist, we take that stance of wanting to really strengthen that person rather than trying to change their actions or coerce them. And in Thessalonians 5:11, it says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up." Just as, in fact, you were doing. One of the apostles' favourite metaphors, I think, is edification. And I think that that's what it's about to some degree, that when people are struggling, we don't necessarily know the reasons why they're struggling. It might not be apparent to us, and we should always take the opportunity to try and walk alongside and strengthen. The other thing which we don't all, I don't always do, I won't speak for the rest of you, but I am actually quite bad at this, is she turned Barak's attention to God. I know people that have insecurities. Do I always point them to the Saviour? Or do I think in my humanness that I can give them good advice, but not the best advice? So Deborah turned Barak's attention to God, and in verse 6, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you to go." So she's saying to him, "Lord, the God of Israel, command you to go. Take 10,000 with you." And in verse 14, she says to Barak, "Go, this is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone ahead of you?" So Deborah's saying, the Lord has gone before you, hasn't he? And she turns his attention to the Lord. And in Judges 5, it says that Barak and Deborah sang this song, so it suggests that he does exhibit some kind of meekness. So she's not, as I've mentioned earlier, rebuking him, pointing out his weakness and failings, but she's trying to change his proximity to God. And so help him in his calling by allowing God to work in him rather than trying to do what I do. I try to fix people. I do it a lot. I say something and they say, and I give loads of helpful suggestions, and I try and fix them and make them better. And then I do that add-on where I say, "Oh, do you want me to pray with you?" So I'm the world's worst at thinking that I can, you know, be the helper for people. And I think that I am increasingly being made aware of the significance in helping others is to help them to access a deeper relationship with God, and a life that is faithful to the way that God wants them to live is more effective than anything that I can ever do. Sorry, I hit my mic then, it reverberated. So that's the first couple of points. And the other thing which I think is really important in this interaction is that she's concerned with his respect and dignity. So not only does she go with him, turn his attention towards God, she acts in a way that is honouring towards him. So in verse 9, she does admonish Barak, saying that because of his disobedience, he would not get the honour that God intended for him. But she was still concerned for his dignity. And I think, but this is the theology of Sam, that in effect she sets him up to win. And the reason I think that is because even though it was foretold that the honour would go to a woman, it wasn't her, it was Jael, he was able to get some of the credit. So Barak's mentioned in Hebrews 11, 32 and 33. I won't read all of it, but paraphrasing. It says, "And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson," and the list goes on, "and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised." And he was also mentioned in 1 Samuel 12:11. "Then the Lord sent Barak," and some other names, "and he delivered you from the hands of your enemies all around you so that you lived in safety." So Barak is accredited with accomplishing what he was called to do. And I think in some way, in my little head when I read this, I would like to think that she sets him up to win. We want to set people up to win. We want to have respect for them, dignity. We want to honour them. And I just think it's really, really important that we kind of take on board how we can have an opportunity to strengthen somebody, encourage them, turn them to God, treat them with dignity, or how, with the power of our words, we can just totally crumble them. And we don't mean to. We're being constructively critical, or we're pointing out something which will helpful because it'll be a learning experience. But the reality is that for a lot of people, that those words are what actually makes them less effective in the things that they should be doing. So we can learn a lot from Deborah about how our actions can help equip others. But there's also a little bit which I think are important about what we can learn from Barak. So we all make mistakes on a continuing basis. I like this royal way, because I'm just presuming that you all make mistakes on a continual basis. I know I do. My husband would also like to tell you that I do. But I do. I make so many mistakes. And it's not out of the right motivation. I think I'm doing the right thing until I go wrong, and then I realise that I've gone very wrong. So, like Barak, we must learn from our mistakes, accept the consequences, and move on in our service to the Lord. So he may have needed help to get onto the path of fulfilling God's will, and it must have been hard knowing he wasn't going to receive the honour for his actions. I'd find that really, really difficult. Go on, carry on, but you know, you're not going to get something really good at the end. And in verse 16, it says that Barak pursued the chariots. And in verse 22, Barak came by in pursuit of Sisera. Now, I think these verses are indicative that he may not have started the journey with the strength, but once the ball was rolling, so to speak, he took seriously his purpose. When somebody came and God, it was kind of like, you know, unleashing kind of what he should have been doing. He took seriously his purpose. And he did respond to God. It had been really natural that he wanted to seek his own fame as a result of what ended up being a great military victory. Not only did he give the glory to God, but he stood meekly in front of Israel and sang a song with the prophetess, assigning the glory where it belonged, and that's in Judges 5. So I think in this passage, Barak is a good illustration of someone God used to lead despite his glaring flaws, and that Deborah is an example of a great encourager which helped him to participate in his adventure. Now, earlier on, I said that Deborah and Barak may symbolise people who are called by God but are reluctant and need help to do it. And that seems really clear cut, doesn't it? You can either be like Deborah or you can be like Barak. But I think that the reality is that we're like both of them. I know that one day I can be very strong, I can see things very clearly, I can be very dependent on God, I can be very kind of on the ball with what I'm doing, and I know that other days I can be just like, I can't do anything, I need some help. And I think that we need to be encouraged by something here. And that, it's just very, very simple. But that God uses both of those people in that story. And that God is always about using us, whether that's in our weaknesses or our strengths, in our failures and our successes. So as we think about adventure and the tagline for this year in terms of our vision, be encouraged to think about how we step out to fulfill what we should be fulfilling, but also be encouraged to think about how we can respond to others that may not be either as far ahead on the journey or are finding things difficult. Think about how we can get alongside them to point them in the right direction. And that's it. Not 42 minutes. It's a lot more succinct. Thank you.